Welcome to Get a Move On, the podcast for movement lovers who are fed up with their injuries and want to enhance their all-round health. On this podcast, I'll help you change how you think about pain and illness so you can drop the frustration and move freely. I'm Amy, an osteopath turned yoga teacher and mindset coach. On this pod, I'll be talking about the joys of pain, injury and illness, the mind-body connection, and how they relate to our movement practice so you can get a move on. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Get a Move On with me, Amy Slevin. Today, I am talking to Paul Thompson, who is also known as the Barefoot Podiatrist. He is an Australian podiatrist who has gone from feeling like an achy old man, in his words, to a spring chicken after years of corrective footwear giving him grief. And Paul took the bold decision to free his feet and embark on a new way of barefoot life. He now helps other people resolve their foot-related problems and promotes barefoot life and minimalist shoes. So, hi Paul, thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's all right. How are you and your feet today?
They're good. I'm sitting here on my earthing mat, just grabbing, working all day. It's evening here now, so I'm just, while we're chatting, I'm just grounding out my energy and sitting here wiggling my toes, just finally got my shoes off for the day.
I haven't heard of an earthing mat. What is that?
So earthing is just basically putting your bare skin, most of the time it's your feet, onto the bare earth. And there's been lots of research, even some MRI studies showing the benefits of it. So it helps with inflammation, helps with a lot of the free radicals. It grounds out a lot of the static type buildup, I guess is the easiest way of putting it, in the world that we live in now, in shoes, in, like, in my office, it's concrete and I'm surrounded by lights and Wi-Fi and phones. And so we absorb some of that bad energy, I guess you could say. And earthing is a way of helping to reconnect to the earth's natural energy field and help reduce inflammation, sleeping. But an earthing mat, because I'm inside a lot, like I try and get outside as much as I can because it's better, obviously, for lots of reasons. But times like now where I can have my shoes off, I'm not with clients now, earthing mats are basically a mat that's full of certain copper or wires or something infused in it, and then I plug that into the power outlet, which goes into just the earthing part of the slot. So there's no power into it, thank goodness, because that would be a very different experience. But it just helps ground out that energy, yeah. So I sleep on an earthing mat. If I'm in the clinic recording things and doing content, I'll sit with my feet on the earthing mat. I normally have one under my hands on my desk.
Cool. So does that mean that you're not wearing any pants to sit on the earthing mat? You said you have to have bare skin touching.
I'll leave it up to the imagination. That's my feet. It's on the ground.
Okay.
Yeah, my bare feet. But I do have pants on for this interview.
Okay. Good to know. So I feel like, I don't know how it is anymore, but I know that sort of being in South Africa a lot when I was a kid, we spent a lot of time not wearing shoes. And I feel like in Australia, there's people, you just don't wear shoes very often. Is that true?
I don't know why people think Australians are always barefoot. Depending on your lifestyle, like I live near the coast, so there's definitely more people who are barefoot, but it's because we live near the beach. Do you know what I mean? So people will be down on the beach without shoes for the most part. Also, the temperature here over summer gets pretty warm, so less people wear enclosed shoes just because of the, like, it's uncomfortable with the heat. So I think a lot of people see that and assume Australians are more barefoot, but the reality is there's not that many Australians that would just walk around completely barefoot. They tend to have, like, yeah, flip-flops or, you know, obviously our early Indigenous tribal people were obviously a lot more barefoot. So there's obviously a lot of photos around of that as well that might give you that impression. But no, unfortunately, barefoot is still seen as something that's quite potentially dirty or might create germs, or there's a minority of us.
Can you tell me, why is being barefoot so important? Like, why do we need not to wear shoes?
Shoes were initially developed as a way of helping humans get to places we couldn't get to before, when we were, you know, living in caves as cave people. You couldn't go to the shop and get shoes. and there may have been hot surfaces or people who wanted to venture into colder climates for survival, whether it be to find more food or whatever we were doing back in those days, I don't know. But we worked out ways of putting animal skins and things under our feet or different materials to protect our feet from different textures, from heat, cold, like the elements to allow us to further our survival. Over the time, that became more of a social kind of fashion piece. And for some reason, back in around the 70s, maybe a bit later, shoes started to really change and become, like, the toe box changed. They became tighter and squishier. They added more layers of cushioning. A heel raise was put into shoes, whether it be dress shoes, high heels, joggers. Like, they all started to get this kind of raised heel through it, which just became the norm. And there was reasons they did that early on for different theories and stuff for running or protecting different areas of people's bodies. It's hard to sell barefoot. It's hard to sell, you know, here's a pair of barefoot shoes that have nothing really in them. They're just protecting your feet. You try and sell that to someone every year as, like, you have to get this new one because it's a new color. Like, maybe you buy it, but...
Yeah, but those companies obviously do exist. So we've got Fieldgrounds and Vivo Barefoot, who are making minimalist and barefoot shoes. And so they are changing the colors and the designs and those kind of things and kind of offering us a new option every season.
100%. And it's awesome. There's more brands coming out. If you understand why you're buying those shoes, it's a no-brainer. And it's, you know, you look for the new colors or the new style of boot or something to wear for fashion, but it's still the same fundamental elements of, like, a healthy shoe. But as far as to the mass public, having features where it's like, you know, we've got this newest cushioning, we've got this air foam, we've got this memory foam, we've got this, like, it's a really easy sell to people. It's like, wow, that's the newest technology to protect my feet. So getting back to your question, why do we need to be barefoot? A lot of these features that are now in shoes that you may or may not know exist in those shoes are changing the function of your feet. And our feet are our foundations. And when we start messing with how our feet work, how the alignment of our feet work, how the alignment of our ankle sits in the shoe because of the heel raise, that affects our whole body from a posture point of view, from an alignment point of view, which over time goes on to affect our movement, our breathing patterns, all sorts of things. So for me, being barefoot, I mean, I prefer to be in a barefoot state, as in completely barefoot, because then you get even more benefits, like more proprioception and nerve input to the feet. But being barefoot or in a barefoot shoe allows you to be in the most natural position you can be and get the most muscle activation, the best joint centration or joint alignment, as well as lots of other things. So there's heaps of benefits, but it just puts you back into a natural state.
Now, I have my own feet, weirdly enough. I have very wide feet. And over the years, I've cultivated some very attractive bunions, especially on my left foot. It doesn't give me any pain. It just looks at me and it's pretty ugly. And over the last couple of years, when I've been wearing shoes a lot less, the bunion has been getting worse. It's bigger and bolder and bulbouser than it has been ever before. So I'm curious to know, like, because I also went on a course about feet a few years ago, and they basically said that bunion formation is genetic.
No.
So what's going on if it's not genetic?
It all comes down to stability. Okay, now you may be more predisposed to bunions if there's a family history, but just because someone in your family has bunions does not mean you're just going to magically develop bunions. From a genetic point of view, the way I see that is you may walk like your predecessors. You may have followed in their footsteps as far as, like, the fashion or the footwear they may have worn, but it's definitely not a just purely genetic thing. Yeah, it comes down to how you stabilize that joint, how the muscles work to hold the big toe in alignment. Like, that's what keeps your toes in a straight position. All right, so the reason it may have gotten worse when you've gone to barefoot shoes is the bunion started because of potentially shoes, the way you were moving, the way that joint wasn't that stable, the way you were rolling off that joint. So some weakness through the foot, through the hip, causes you to roll off the inside of the toe too much in conjunction with tight, squishy shoes. They're over-supportive, you know, the likes of that. Once you take those tight, squishy shoes off, go to a barefoot shoe or be more barefoot. If you don't fix the underlying stability problem, then you've just taken away any type of support that you still had, which was the shoe, and now expecting your foot to work as hard as it's ever worked in its life with no training. Okay, so if you go and look at how you're moving, check your hip function, hip stability, as well as your foot and ankle stability, and work on that, you'll probably find you'll create more stability through the inside of your arch, through the big toe. You'll start to load that better, you'll get more control over it, and you'll start to reverse some of those effects of the bunion, at least stop it from progressing.
That kind of sort of answers my next question, is like, what can we do about bunions? Some people I know have painful bunions, and some people just have them and they just are there existing, deviating the toe off to the side. Because I've also been trying to do exercises to once you take, get my toe to go straight again.
Your shoes
I just
off.
Feel like it's a losing battle, really. Tell me there's hope for me.
Of course there's hope, but it's a journey. We live in this world where we want things now. If you want it yesterday. And that's kind of the health model we live in now. It's we go to the practitioner, doctor, whoever it is you're going to be treated by, and you want them to fix you now, whether it's with surgery, whether it's with some sort of magical tool that will help alleviate that pain or the look of that bunion. For sure, like surgery, you could straighten that up, make it look amazing, but functionally, it still won't work. It's still not going to be the toe you've always dreamt of. It won't have that stability through it. The unfortunate reality is that when we start working on resetting our bodies to work more naturally, whether that's mindset, whether it's diet, whether it's fixing and reclaiming our natural foot function, it takes time and it takes patience, it takes repetition, it takes being kind of committed to that lifestyle of fixing that problem. Like the same as with like a diet, if you know you have a reaction to a certain food, or you're trying to work on improving your weight or whatever it is you're trying to do with food, you don't just do it for a day and then go, ah, I didn't lose any weight. You're like, well, why not? I don't know. I ate that one healthy salad and nothing happened. Like, this whole salad thing's a rot. It's like, well, it takes time. It's going to take patience with this stuff. But with bunions, like, if they're bad enough and painful, there is an option for surgery if it's really stopping and immobilizing people. But there's heaps of things you can do, from foot exercises through to obviously hip exercises too. There's a big correlation there between foot stability and hip stability. Toe spaces are a really good tool to put between all of your toes, start actually stretching them out and getting some better alignment. Have you got the toe spaces?
Yeah, I'm not wearing them right now. I think maybe it's a bit too big for me, because it's just like, oh, there's a lot of space between my toes. And I think obviously like my foot is not necessarily used to having its toes flared quite so substantially. So they're just like, whoa, we're so far away from each other. Where are we? Where's my friend?
Yeah, and there's different toe spacer brands. Sometimes depending on which one you have, you may find it's just trying a different one, you know, like they're not all the same. There's some that are really like quite beyond natural position.
I just bought some cheap shit from China that I saw on the internet, and I was like, oh, that looks nice, I'll buy that. And it was, you know, £2.50 or something. And I didn't know that there were different options. I was just like, okay, this is what I see available to me. That's what I'll buy.
Yeah, and different materials. So some of them are firmer than others. Some are a softer silicone. Correct Toes are kind of the original, like, one that was sort of founded by a guy in the States, Ray McClanahan. He's a podiatric surgeon. His are more tapered to the foot as well. So rather than just being like a stock standard spacer, his are more based on anatomical foot shape. And his are actually customizable. You pay a lot more for them, but like that's what I use. The quality is a lot better. You can pack out between the little toe and the big toe to make it more or less. So there's definitely options.
Okay, that's really cool. Now, I'm curious to know, what is the difference between what a toe spacer is doing and what an orthotic might be doing?
Yeah, so I do get this a lot too, where people will say it's kind of like an equivalent of an orthotic for your toes. Yeah, ideally you want to have like natural toe splay. Now, the main difference I see is an orthotic stops movement. Okay, so an orthotic is placed under your arch to support the arch and to minimize the amount of flattening of the arch or pronation that your foot can do to create an artificial support. With toe spacers, yes, they're like an orthotic, but they're creating better alignment to then fuel better movement. So you'll get better movement of that joint if it's in the right position, where the orthotic isn't putting the arch in a better position to allow for better movement, it's just blocking movement. Okay, so I see a toe spacer as more of like a training tool. So almost like braces for your teeth, how it's doing something to pull you into alignment and then try and eventually keep it there. Whereas an orthotic is more like reading glasses, where while it's on, it will do what it's doing, take it off, and you can't see again. Okay, so it's a different kind of outcome. One you need to use forever. One, the idea is that you start to rely on it less and less, which is the toe spacer.
That's really interesting. Okay, so the benefits that somebody would get from having orthotics under their foot, it's kind of what you're saying is that it's short-lived. It's kind of only there whilst their foot is on the orthotic, and those benefits don't translate to when they're not wearing shoes anymore, right?
Yeah, so the main benefit of an orthotic is a reduced bank account. Look, they have a time and place, but they again have become this huge marketing tool where you have a foot problem, and now, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a podiatrist, but initially podiatrists were kind of the people you'd go to have an orthotic made for you as a prescription. With technology growing and different foot scanning tools, and it got easier for other people to start to do that. So now here in Australia, you can get your orthotics from physiotherapists, chiropractors, from the local chemist. I mean, even our local supermarkets have off-the-shelf orthotics that you can put into a shoe that aren't customized, but supportive insoles are just viewed as like sore feet, get more support from an insole. But it doesn't fix the problem. It can help reduce pain because you're offloading the problem or offloading the painful area. But once you take that out, it hasn't changed anything.
Well, I was training as an osteopath back in the dark ages. We had this one tutor who was very entertaining, and he would always refer back to the big toe. Like, you have a neck problem, I'd look at the big toe. Like, if they've got a wrist problem, I'd look at the big toe. It's really funny. You know, there are people, and I think I'm one of them, who do have a stiff big toe joint. And I'm kind of curious, like, I don't know that much. Obviously, that's why we're talking to you. If you do have a stiff big toe joint, what is making it stiff? Is it like the way that the bones are positioned and the way that the bones are kind of meeting each other at that big toe joint? Is that the bones are kind of interfering with the movement? Is it a soft tissue thing? Or how do we arrive at a place where we have a stiff big toe?
It can be all of the above. So reduced range of motion in the big toe can range from, yeah, bony changes, arthritic changes. You can get bony spurs that start to grow that block the range of motion of the joint. You can get a breakdown of soft tissue in that joint that means it is more bone on bone. There's no cushioning between it anymore to allow for like nice fluid sort of movement. You can definitely get soft tissue problems outside of the joint. So some of the tendons that help to move the big toe, they may get stiff or weak or overactive. That can change how much movement you have through that big toe as well. But the biggest one I see, it comes down to alignment. If that big toe is pushed out of its natural alignment, then it becomes bone on bone and you lose range of motion. And the less you use that big toe, the less range of motion you'll eventually have. The ball of the foot's where we've always measured the broadest part of the shoe, right? But when you look at a natural foot, someone who hasn't been in shoes, so whether that's a young child who still has a good foot shape, or some of these tribes that are still bare feet, the widest part is actually the toes. So the toe, the big toe, when you look at where the bunion starts to form, if the big toe stayed straight, you would have good alignment of the toe, right? And that toe joint where the bunion is. Where it starts to creep in is where the bunion forms. So unfortunately, we've been measuring the width of the shoe in the wrong place, thanks to shoe companies making them like this for so long, that it pulls our toes inwards out of alignment all day, every day when we're in shoes. So we see a lot of like bunions, but we see a lot of stiff toe joints all the time. And they're not always huge bunions or bulbous bunions, like you said, but you can lose the range of motion just because that toe has been pulled out of position for so long and then not being used in the way that it should. And most shoes also have a bit of a rocker at the front. So if you put your shoe flat on the ground, like a typical jogger, not a barefoot shoe, the front of it will have a bit of a rocker built in. So the front would kind of rock forward and back. That means less big toe mobility is needed in that shoe too, because the front of the shoe starts to do the work for you. So you don't have to bend your big toe to the full range, where you start to not use the big toe, which then means you don't use it, you lose it, and that range of motion stops. And back to that genius professor you had, or tutor, he's right. Like, you lose big toe range of motion or lose stability in the big toe, and that's the toe that helps activate the muscles in our arch, the muscles up into our hip, pelvic floor, which then helps activate our core. So if you're not stabilizing through your big toe properly, or you can't bend it enough to walk naturally or normally, then you have to compensate one way or another. And it doesn't always have to be at the foot. We're really good at finding a way around things to still function. And it might be that the way you're sort of throwing your foot around then affects the hip, then the hip absorbs it enough that, yeah, it's the opposite shoulder that starts to actually play up just based on how you're trying to, you know, take that impact of that big toe. So, yeah, big toe can affect absolutely everything.
Amazing. And so if someone does have, say, for example, a stiff big toe because of a bony change, is there hope for them without surgery? Can they restore their range of motion in the big toe if it is a bony change? Yeah.
So it depends on the bony change. So if it's just a bunion, most bunions are a form of dislocation. That's what it is. So it's not just the big toe. It's actually the bone or the metatarsal behind the big toe as well. The long bone up the inside of your foot, that changes shape. It kind of comes out towards the arch. Then the big toe comes back in. And then the lump on the side is the bone trying to stabilize the joint. So if the actual joint where it's meant to bend doesn't have any bone stopping it from bending, then yeah, by mobilizing that toe, getting the muscles around that toe stronger, I see it all the time. Like, it may not go back to normal looking at it if there's structural changes. Like, there might always be a bit of a lump on the side, or it might feel a bit different. But for me, it always comes back to function. If someone can bend that big toe to the full range with control, can create power through that big toe, then you'll have enough function to move more naturally and get on top of all those other aches and pains that may be coming from that big toe. So there is hope for you still.
Cool. So moving away from the big toe, I want to talk about arches and pronation and what is normal and what is abnormal, what is healthy, what is unhealthy, and how do we know? So we'll go with arches. Like, we hear about flat feet, which is why people get prescribed orthotics. How do we know what's normal, and do we need to change it necessarily?
What's normal? Like, everyone's different. There's no one body type, and arches are the same. Like, you'll look at some of the islanders who still walk, you know, barefoot on islands, and they have some of the flattest feet that you'll ever see, but they're functional. They have really strong feet. The big toe and the toe splay is all still really good. Everything's in alignment, and the foot and the arch will still function in a way that supports the rest of the body. So to look at an arch, I mean, I've been doing this for, 15, 16 years. So it's easier for me to look at someone's foot and kind of know, like, whether their flat foot or their high arch is normal or not, just because I've seen so many feet and you start to pick up patterns. And but to the naked eye, it's more about function. It's more about whether that foot's rolling in into pronation and then stays there. If your direction of force when you're walking, your foot rolls in and then you just keep rolling in even further over that foot, that's not normal. The foot's meant to land kind of on the outside of the heel, and give or take, again, there's no normal. There's just natural, but as a general rule, landing on the outside of the heel for walking, we're going to roll into some pronation to absorb shock. And then as we start to load the foot into the midfoot, so our foot's flat on the ground, we'll start anchoring that big toe, creating stability. And then as we start to wind up to toe off, or where we start to bend the big toe, we actually start coming out of pronation into what's called supination, so the opposite. We start to wind the arch back up, which creates stability through the whole foot and arch. That creates a rigid foot type. So then we can use that rigid foot to push off into the next step. So that's a functional foot where you will pronate and supinate at the right time. But back to your original question, is just looking at an arch, doesn't really matter how big or small your arch is. It's more looking at that function. So do we need to change arches? Yeah, if they're not functional, then doing training drills and working on mobility, strength, motor control, these are important things to help with function. But just propping it up, in my mind, doesn't achieve long-term changes that we'd like to see for someone trying to restore foot health.
Okay, cool. That's super interesting. And then that kind of leads me on to my next question about pronation and supination. So I don't know if this still exists, but there was definitely a time when you could buy running shoes that were designed to prevent you from over pronation or under pronation. Is that something that we need to control? Do we need shoes that help us to regulate our pronation?
No. Through uni, all those years ago, that's what we were taught. If someone had sore feet, if someone was over pronating, we'd put them in a shoe that would control that pronation. If that wasn't enough, we'd then look at an orthotic to further control that pronation or supination, whatever we're trying to do. These days, now that I work more on like function and trying to, I guess, rehabilitate natural movement, I would still use pronation control in a shoe or supination control as a treatment, not as a just, oh, gee, look, your foot's rolling in, you should get that sort of shoe. Like, no, if someone's in pain, so say they've injured their tibialis posterior muscle, you know, that helps hold the ankle up on the inside of the foot, and they're pronating too much, so it keeps aggravating that, or plantar fasciitis, no, bad example, because I don't even use that anymore, but tib post, tendon, the inside of the ankle, it's pretty common, then I might use that sort of shoe to help keep the arch in a slightly better position while we just settle that injury down, or an Achilles injury, using a bit of a heel raise from all the shoes at the local normal sports shoe shop, have that heel raise, that will help offload that Achilles while we're healing it. But then after a few months of doing that, then I'll start to rehabilitate them back into a more natural state anyway. So there is a place for them. In my mind, it's more of a treatment rather than a preventative tool. They're not for the mass public. They should be as a prescription for a particular condition.
Okay, that's super interesting. Now, you talk about vitamin T. I've not heard of vitamin T before.
Yeah, you won't find that in the pharmacy.
What is it?
It's just getting more texture in our food. I mean, obviously vitamins is just like a supplement for something, is kind of the term vitamin. It's just supplementing, whether it's a, you know, vitamin C, D, but T for texture. We've got around 200,000 nerve endings in our feet. So they're similar to our like fingertips and lips, have lots of nerve endings. They give our brain lots of feedback for good reason. If we touch something hot, our brain reacts really quick to get us away from that, or same as our lips, and our feet are no different. Our feet are constantly, if not in shoes, meant to be giving our brain constant feedback on the angle of the earth, the texture of what we're walking on. Is it sharp? Is it smooth? Is it slippery? Is it hot, cold? So our brain can then really quickly try and work out our best way of not falling over or not damaging our skin if it's hot or cold. So tapping into a lot of those nerve endings helps connect our brain to our feet a lot more, and we get better muscle activation, better balance. So it's getting more texture, and it's lots of different textures. So you want to work on different angles. I take my kids down the beach a lot and walk over all the like rock platforms, little rock pools, so we'll get like some water on our feet. And depending on the time of year, it's either cold or warm. There's shells, there's sand, there's rocks, there's slippery surfaces, there's quite rough surfaces that, and you're also climbing and activating a lot of muscles through your feet. It's not just a flat surface either. But if you're at home and you can't get to the beach, or it's winter or whatever, even just using, you know, carpet, tiles, maybe some grass outside, just trying to find some different textures around the house to, and ideally some textures that aren't always flat are nice. There's some really cool sensory boxes online that people make, almost like little sand pits, and they'll put some pebbles in one, sand in another, whatever, different textures. And normally a lot of kids will use them for sensory tools, but it's great for adults too. Just walking and getting those different textures over our feet really helps connecting our brain to our feet.
That is super cool. And it reminded me actually of a place that I've been to in England. It's kind of nearish to the north of England. It might not be that far. And it's a kind of a big sort of country manor house where they have this barefoot walk, which was kind of influenced or created by this German doctor whose name I've forgotten. And I'm like, I was just Googling actually to try and to remember who his name, what his name was. Anyway, so it's like a whole kind of like, not massively long, but like a kind of walk over lots of different textures. There's like sand, pebbles, bark chips. You walk through water, gravel, loads of different textures that you kind of walk through as a sort of sensory experience for your feet.
I remember when I started going barefoot, it was really uncomfortable. You know, certain gravel would be just like, I'd rather poke myself in the eye with a needle. Like, it was painful.
Well, that's kind of how it feels. You're like, ooh, ah, ooh, ah.
It's like you're walking on hot coals or something. But what happens is over time, you really adjust. And I crave that now. Like, I crave that feeling of rocks and textures poking into my feet. Like, I feel like I get better hip activation. I actually kind of tend to walk much more naturally when I have that sensation of what's under my foot. We also increase our working memory by being barefoot. And what this means is not your physical memory of what happened 20 years ago. It's that working memory, like a computer processor, of how many things you can be processing really quickly at any given time. It just makes logical sense once you stop and think about it. When you're barefoot, you are constantly scanning what's on the ground. You're really connected to that walk or hike or whatever you're doing at the time, because your brain is now trying to not only work on whatever you're doing, whether it's talking to someone whilst you're walking or looking at the scenery, but your brain's also trying to constantly scan to protect you from walking on something sharp or hot. So you're processing things a lot quicker.
Wow, that's so interesting.
But yeah, but it makes sense, right? Like you were saying, you felt more connected to like that walk. And as corny as it sounds, like I love going for barefoot hikes. We've got an escarpment here, which is like essentially like a cliff behind the beach, and we can hike up through the bush there and some beautiful lookouts. So it's beautiful to go to, but hiking up there in shoes versus being barefoot, completely different experience. I always feel such a more connected experience without kind of sounding too corny or spiritual, but you're constantly scanning and really appreciating what's underfoot and feeling, you know, parts of it's dirt, parts of it's rock, like there's even a sandy part of one of the hikes I do. Like it changes, and it's weird how you kind of, you notice more on the walk versus just putting your shoes on and hiking for the sake of hiking. It's weird how you do kind of really take in a lot more, I find, when you are barefoot.
Yeah, super interesting. And I think that's a brilliant place to leave it. So this has been highly informative for me, hopefully for everybody else as well. Thank you so much for sharing some amazing knowledge and wisdom about the feet and being a part of the barefoot conversation.
No worries. I hope it helps, and I hope people start getting their shoes off and reconnecting to those beautiful little things on the end of their feet.
Awesome.